You are listening to Currency of Style podcast, episode number 9. Welcome to Currency of Style podcast. I am your host, Eva Kelly. This podcast is about supporting women rise in their career, encouraging you to reach for new opportunities and to find more success by elevating your style. Thank you so much for joining me today, Perla, on the Currency of Style podcast. It's a great honor to meet with you and sit with you for 30 minutes while we go over your background, your career in tech, and any wisdom you have for the listeners today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm excited to be here and to chat with you today.
Whereabouts are you right now, Perla?
I'm in Houston, Texas, in the United States.
Perla, you have a really interesting background. When I read your LinkedIn profile and I noticed that you went to Massachusetts Institute of Technology, so that's like an amazing achievement in itself. So I just wondered if you can take me back to before you went to MIT and what you studied and the journey to getting into MIT. I know I myself have tried. I applied to go to MIT on their graduate program and I wasn't successful. So it's like the ultimate academic achievement that you have achieved. And I'd love to hear about that.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you. I appreciate you kind of describing it in that way. MIT was a long shot for me as well, I think. So I am a first generation college graduate. So neither of my parents went to college in the United States. So the application process and the idea of applying to college was all very new to me. It was a big jump. We weren't sure what we were getting ourselves into. And to be honest, when I was applying, I also felt the same way. Like, it was a big jump. It was kind of a leap of faith to some extent. I felt that way about college in general. I actually applied to maybe almost 20 schools because I was so nervous that nothing would really stick, right? So MIT kind of came as a surprise to some extent. I was nervous about the process, but the interview process was really calming in terms of like meeting alumni and understanding how they're real people, right? I think we think about them in this way. So it was a great experience. It was a leap of faith. I actually, you know, from my background and just like growing up as a first generation student in the United States, I didn't know what MIT was up until a few months before applying. So it was kind of blind from every direction. Yeah, and I took the leap. And when I got accepted, I visited Boston. And it was one of the first times I was like leaving home, leaving Texas by myself. And I knew that it was an opportunity I had to take. But even then, it was nerve-wracking, right? Like, you're saying yes to this opportunity. You almost can't believe that you're one of those people that did get the opportunity. And like, what does that mean, right? Like, how do you take that opportunity and not let people down in the process? So yeah, it's interesting to think back at that time. Yeah, I took the opportunity. It was 4 years that were incredibly challenging, I think. So I was always a straight A student, very much like a type A following the rules kind of person. But taking a leap from being like such a strong performer in a high school in Texas, a public high school in Texas, to moving into this environment where everyone you're surrounded by are these high performers from very different backgrounds was a big one. I think initially, like, you walk in very much trying to be a straight A student and your world kind of shifts a little bit. So it was a long 4 years, difficult 4 years in many ways, but I think also just such an eye-opening opportunity. I think you asked about what career did I want to do. I came into MIT really wanting to be pre-med. I studied kind of biology in some sense. But I also knew that I was very strong in the technical field. So I had done a computer science course in my high school. And so I was exploring both things. There was a joint degree in computational biology and computer science. And the Institute is designed in such a way to really let you have a moment to explore that. So about halfway through my sophomore year, I realized, to be honest, I was horrible at the biology. Just chemistry was not my subject. I had to study so much harder for like my organic chemistry final than for my computer science final, for example, that I took a pivot and I said, you know, if this is where what I'm good at, this is where my calling is, let's give this a, like a bigger opportunity. So around my sophomore year, I pivoted into computer science and ultimately graduated with a degree in computer science and engineering. But I still knew I wanted whatever I did in tech to have like this wider impact, which is originally what had driven me into pre-med and that side of the world.
That's great to get that description of what you went through at MIT and your experience there. Did somebody inspire or mentor you as you progressed through MIT?
Yeah, I think if I really look back at MIT and like my career in general, there's always people along the way. So I mentioned that I took a computer science course in high school and I took it. My teacher there, her name's Miss Redden, Julie Redden. I've actually connected with her recently and I'll be coming back to the high school to talk to her students as she continues to like create opportunities for women in STEM. Once at MIT, there was definitely other people there as well that just kind of help you get through the day to day because it can be a daunting place. But I think if I really look at it holistically throughout my career, my time at MIT, my mom has been like a huge anchor, I think, in taking a leap into the unknown, taking an opportunity as it comes, or even like rooting for an opportunity. When I got accepted to MIT, like I said, we knew little about exactly what that meant. We knew it was a big deal. We knew it was a great opportunity. And she always encouraged me to just like, figure it out as you go, take a leap. She continues to be someone I call when, you know, different paths come my way in my career, just to like settle into the opportunity and give things a shot.
After MIT then, what were your next steps?
Yeah, so I mentioned I graduated computer science and engineering, but I knew I wanted to do something that had some kind of impact, but I didn't know what that meant. And if anyone listening is in the space, computer science and engineering is so broad. You can go in so many different directions. So when I started looking at the different opportunities and applying for jobs and seeing what the next step would be, I came across a global consultancy named ThoughtWorks, which is where I am now. And I think what really drove me to ThoughtWorks was that it was a consultancy. So it was going to let me figure out what was next. That's what I thought. 7.5 years ago, I thought it was going to give me an opportunity to try a lot of different things and then really like jump into one thing. I also really liked the way they talked about technology was about how it impacted social and economic justice at the time. And I found that really intriguing as well. I'd never thought about technology from that perspective. So that's kind of where my career kicked off. And like I mentioned, I've been there since graduating school.
And when you say that this was a broad type of a consultancy firm, what type of paths did it present to you? Or what could you give examples of what areas that you were working on?
Yeah, definitely. I think in terms of domain, I've worked across the board. So I worked with a major airline. I worked with a major retailer, a health insurance organization, a quick restaurant, kind of like a fast food restaurant chain. So I've really delved into very different domains. And also from the technical perspective, I've had the opportunity to move around as well. So I started off very focused kind of in back-end development, looking at microservices and APIs and how kind of to leverage those. I pivoted into front-end development for some time. It was when like React and Redux were like the big thing and the buzzword of the year. And then I spent some time more holistically, like full stack across the board, understanding kind of how to lead a team through something. I had the opportunity to be a tech lead. And then shortly after that, I pivoted completely and jumped into data engineering, did some infrastructure work as well. Realized that maybe I don't love infrastructure work, to be honest, But I did have the opportunity to pivot into a lot of different angles. And I think I look back now and it looks like that's part of who I am. I've pivoted every couple of years into new technology, into new domain, and it really drives my curiosity to continue exploring.
Amazing. That's a great way to start off your career in that type of firm where you get to experience different domains within your technical field. It's a great piece of advice for people listening, I think, who are out of college and not sure what to do. But yeah, so you mentioned that you had an opportunity to pivot. So each time when you pivoted, did you like create these new opportunities for yourself? And if you could talk me through that a little bit, how that happened?
Yeah, definitely. I think initially it was kind of what came, right? Like you take the year as it comes. But then as each opportunity led me like a different direction. So I mentioned I was looking at APIs at the very beginning of my career, back-end development. It was what I was most comfortable with. But I was also interfacing with the team that was working on the front end development. And like you see things a lot more concretely, I think, on the front end side of things. So when I realized that that was something I didn't know about, it was a curiosity that led me to take a jump. So then for us, when you kind of complete a project, you then kind of come back to settle in and you're in this intermediary state of what's next. And it could be, you know, whatever is coming up, whatever opportunity is there. But I also took it upon myself to ask, right? When I wanted to take this pivot, I asked, are there opportunities where I can jump into front-end development? I don't know the technology 100%, but I can learn quickly and I can adapt to that. And that's, I think, something I would say to the listeners as well. Like, don't be afraid to just ask. If you're thinking about something, even contemplating a small pivot, what does that look like? Give it a shot. Like the worst thing that could happen is no, that's not an opportunity that's available right now. And then you continue with whatever else is happening. And I think the biggest jump for me was, like you mentioned, into data engineering. Everything else kind of made sense. And that felt like a really hard pivot. And I did it in the same way. Like I knew data was a big buzzword at the time, and I think it continues to be today, really. And I knew that I wanted to keep up, right? Technology continues to evolve and it's so broad. And I asked, you know, are there opportunities? The first opportunity I did was very small, kind of just listening in almost to something that was going on and engaging in that way. And then from there, we actually developed a training program internally that I was able to be a part of to jump into that next opportunity and experience. So never be afraid to just ask, just kind of make it clear what you're looking for as a next step.
That's fantastic. Great advice. So in your role right now, is there the opportunity to manage people? I think you mentioned you were a team leader at one point.
So I did have the opportunity, I want to say a couple of years ago now, to tech lead. And I was leading a group actually. So I was based in New York at the time. And there was two or three of us in New York, and the rest of the team was all in Sao Paulo, Brazil. So it was not only like leading a team, but before the pandemic, it was jumping into this idea of like remoteness and like co-located teams. It was a great opportunity. I think for me, it was one of the biggest learning jumps. How do you really look at technology from a bigger perspective? But also you want to make sure that the people you're working with feel empowered to try something new, to take the lead on something. And I think that was the biggest lesson for me. It was just because you're leading a team doesn't mean you need to have all the answers. Your team has those answers for you, and it's leveraging your teammates.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
It just strikes me how young you are. And, you know, was it intimidating being a team leader to people who are probably older than you?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I think that's been the theme in my career to some extent. It was certainly a jump. And I think that's what led me to that thinking, right, of taking advantage of who your teammates are. Those that had a lot more experience in the field than I did, or were very strong technically because they had not pivoted maybe as much as I had. Those were people that I could come to for advice, that I could make sure were leading the team while I was, you know, being pulled into meetings. So it's certainly it's an intimidating process, but you also kind of take a leap and also realize that there's people around you that are not knowledgeable, right? And they're different skill sets sometimes to like lead a team versus really dive into an architecture and debug whatever is going on. And you can work to bring those together. So yeah, definitely it's intimidating. I've definitely led people who are older than me, who have more experience than I do. And it's a matter of kind of how you approach that, right? And making sure you give them room to speak when it makes sense and when they have the knowledge, and like admitting and acknowledging that the knowledge is there and not necessarily in me was a huge first step. And I think it made everyone around me comfortable to jump in, to step in, and to give me feedback along the way to continue growing as I worked with them.
That's so interesting. It's really nice the way you describe it. Like, I'm learning from you right now, and just to the thought of allowing other people to display their expertise, which is more than yours, and that's okay, and to ask for that feedback. I think you earn their respect more from the people you're leading with that authenticity, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely.
So tell me about your current role today. What's your job title, and what would a typical day at work be like for you?
So actually, I mentioned like as a consultant, I've had periods where I'm like into what's next. I'm actually in one of those periods now, but my most recent role was a little bit different. So I actually took a jump out up from consulting and working with clients for about 2.5 years. So right, almost as the pandemic hit us, I was looking at these other opportunities and I pivoted to an internal role. So working more with the operations of our organization as the technical assistant to the CTO. So what does that mean? I think it's a loaded term. Think almost like a chief of staff for the CTO, a lot of program management around the technology organization. And also through that opportunity, I played product owner for one of our biggest technical thought leadership assets that we produce biannually called the Technology Radar. So it's a thought piece that takes the experience across our consultancy, so globally across all 12,000 and plus consultants, and tries to kind of condense that into an opinionated piece on kind of technology that we recommend you should adopt, technology that still is worth experimenting with. So we've been producing that as an organization for over 10 years. And I had the opportunity to play the product owner for that and really look at this piece, this thought piece as more than that, and kind of think about it as a product and kind of how it evolves as we continue to grow as an organization.
Would a typical day be where you're working remotely on this particular role, or would it be in the office?
So definitely I've been working from home for about 2.5 years now, and it was a big shift, I think, definitely with kind of COVID and how that changed the way we work. But also when I was a consultant, I mentioned I led a team in New York. So there was a lot of travel. I was on a plane twice a week, like flying in Sunday night, flying out Thursday night. And suddenly you kind of shift that completely to I work from my home office every day. So that was a big shift. I think a lot of us faced that shift. For this role, it made sense. There wasn't as much travel required because I work with a global team within this role. So a typical day, honestly, I became very much a morning person because we were holding meetings with sometimes people in India and teams in China or Australia, and time zones become a nightmare. So every day looked different, and depending on what I was working through, or if I was working on the Technology Radar, which is twice a year, or other kind of assets or projects that the technology organization was taking on. But typically, I would start my morning with some kind of consensus meeting. So depending on the day of the week, it was either with my direct team at the office of the CTO, understanding what we were taking on for the week, or on a different day, that was our marketing team to get an understanding of, you know, when are we producing this next thought piece? What does it look like? What is the message that we're trying to say have as a technology organization? Other days, I was meeting with our website team to understand like when we're ready to publish these thought leadership pieces What do they look like? Is it a blog that you're reading? Is it an interactive interface? How do we upload that information onto our systems? So every day looked a little bit different. Other days where we didn't have kind of like the day-to-day of producing this asset or getting something into production, it might have meant thinking about what's next, right? A lot of what that role entailed was almost anticipating what was coming. So if we're working on producing the technology radar, it's set to launch in March. In February, I'm already thinking about what comes next. What is the next thing that we're focusing on in April and May to make sure that that's all taken care of and assessed? So it was a big pivot in terms of like deeply being in technology and writing code. But I think it gave me a perspective of how we function as an organization, how we think about technology as it continues to evolve. So some of what the office of the CTO was really focused on was emerging technology. What advice are we giving our clients in terms of all these buzzwords, AI, Web3, the metaverse? So part of it was knowing what kind of conversations we needed to be having, what kind of research we needed to do to understand how to best provide advice to our clients.
And from your career to date, your experience so far, was it ever challenging being a woman in tech?
Absolutely. I think sometimes we talk about imposter syndrome and it's very real. And I think, you know, 7.5 years into my career, it still comes up, right? Especially as I pivot, every time I pivot into something different, I feel that tension early on. And there is a challenge from that. There's a challenge from sometimes being one of the only ones in the room, like when the discussions are having, you know, who do you talk to that has a similar experience as yours or is seeing having a similar perspective? So I think definitely, I think it's challenging sometimes. I think for me, what's really led me when I start feeling that way, like taking a step back, you know, this opportunity came to me because I can take on this, because I can do this, I can learn from this. And also, like I mentioned, when I was tech leading, looking at those people around me, like, where do I draw support from? How do I work through things and make it clear, like what the honesty of where I am in this journey has helped me, I think, along the way. But it's very real. And sometimes we think, you know, someone 10, 15 years into their career, and I've met plenty of people who still experience imposter syndrome. And I think the biggest antidote to that is talking through our experiences, which is why I was excited you invited me to talk through this, because you hear people who go through similar experiences or experiences you're interested in going through, and you realize it's okay. You realize others feel that way sometimes as well. And it's doable, it's achievable. And I think if we build a community around us of women in tech, we will believe it as well.
That's brilliant. Yeah, I really love the way you say that. It's about building a community and being transparent with our experiences and sharing so we don't feel alone or we're the only ones experiencing this imposter syndrome. And so were you ever turned down for a promotion? I like to ask my guests that because I wonder how you cope with any fails you've met along your career so far.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I love the message behind that because it's also not the first thing we share, right? When we introduce ourselves. But yeah, multiple times throughout my career, the role I just described, right, as a technical assistant of the CTO, I was in that role for 2.5 years and it wasn't my first time applying for it. So there was an internal process for applying to the role. I applied to it 2 years prior, since it's kind of like a rotational role of about 2 years. And it didn't work out. I actually didn't get very far in the interview process. And, you know, I took that as a learning experience. Like, what does that mean? Like, what experiences can I focus on instead to give it another shot? I think that's also a huge piece of advice for me is, kind of rejection doesn't mean rejection always. It means take that as like feedback. What does that mean? How do I improve? And how do I give it another opportunity? Especially if it's something you're like really interested and passionate about, like knock that door more than once and continue giving it an opportunity. So yeah, I didn't get the opportunity. That was actually instead a couple of months later when I started tech leading, and I had the great opportunity to stretch myself in that way, work with that team in Brazil. And I look back as one of the biggest learning opportunities in my career, actually. And if this role would have worked out sooner, I wouldn't have had that opportunity. And maybe that opportunity is what gave me that extra push for what I needed to take on this role. So definitely it happens. We talked a little bit early on about like MIT. I applied to a lot of other like big name schools. I applied to Harvard, to Stanford, and none of those worked out. But so that's also part of the advice. Like the more opportunities you knock out, like the more you'll understand, like, this is maybe where my path is taking me and we know where it should be. So even though some of those other schools didn't work out, when MIT did, it didn't hurt very much. It like worked out on its own. So yeah, definitely. I think we all experience it. I think we should talk about it more. And I would say as it happens, you know, give it another opportunity, give it another shot. You know, I believe a lot on kind of how your journey kind of builds on itself. So if that's not the opportunity for you, something else will open up, right? So continue knocking on those doors.
Yeah, I love the way you say knock on that door multiple times. From your experience as well, I was wondering, how important is it for women to be reaching for more opportunities, either within their organization or outside? For example, did you actively pursue opportunities to progress, or did you find these opportunities kind of naturally came to you?
I think it's a mixture of both, but I would say it's important to take that leap in kind of putting out there what you're interested in next. So the biggest pivot we talked about was into kind of data engineering. I made sure I knocked on that door. When a learning opportunity came up, I made sure that I like took it and kind of demonstrated that I was interested in that space.
When you say to let them know that you're interested in this role, like how did that look for you? Did you meet with the manager and tell him?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's important. So for us internally, we have a staffing profile of when client opportunities come up. So I made sure that that demonstrated my interest. But also we have kind of staffing management, and I met with them directly and I said, this is something I'm interested in for my next opportunity. If, you know, there is something like that, keep me in mind for that. So I made sure I publicized it, but also amongst the people you work on a day-to-day with, like if you have a direct manager, just letting them know, even the opportunity is not around the corner, even if it hasn't been advertised. Planting that seed, I think, is important in terms of understanding when it does come up, make sure that they think about you, right? Make sure that you're one of the people they say, you know what, so-and-so actually told me they were interested in moving into this space. So that's what I would say, have those conversations every time you check in with a manager, whenever you're exploring kind of what that next opportunity could be within your organization, making sure that you network also widely. I think that's been important for me. So even having mentors and sponsors who think of me when these opportunities come up and letting them know, these are the things I'm thinking about in this time in my career.
Brilliant. Do you feel style has played a role in your career to date? Like, does it affect how you show up? Does your style give you more confidence, say, in your career?
Yes, I love this question. I love the perspective that you're taking with this angle. I think the way I show up absolutely impacts my confidence, and it can look different for everyone. But for me, even, you know, to talk to you today, you know, I made sure that I felt confident, that I was dressed up, even though I'm working from home and it's cold and I would rather be under a blanket. I think that confidence comes from how you show up in a space. Even further, I think there's something in terms of how we evolve our identities that come back to style. So my curly hair has been a process. I used to like actively straighten my hair, and during the pandemic, I wanted to give it an opportunity, my natural hair to come through. And it's been a newfound confidence for me in my identity as a woman of color in this space. So I think Definitely. Style, the way you show up, it really impacts the way you feel. And when you feel confident, it's easier to kind of push back that imposter syndrome or the fact that you're, you know, teaching or leading a group of people that have more experience than you because you feel it in yourself.
Yeah, I love your curly hair, by the way. I wish I had it.
Thank you.
So in summary, what three pieces of advice would you offer to women in the workplace who want to succeed like you have?
Yeah, definitely. So we've talked through some of these, but I would say the first one would be knock on the door and do it again, right? Make sure you ask for what you want. If you don't, then how can people like surrounding you help you get to that space? So knock on the door, do it again. The second piece of advice that I would say is to take the leap at opportunities. Sometimes you knock on the door and you don't expect it to open. It does open, and then that can be intimidating, or it can be, you know, my career has been full of pivots, and that's been nerve-wracking as well. Like, what is actually my identity in technology if I continue to shift? And I would say, don't be nervous about reinventing yourself as you take that leap. And last but not least, I would say, build a colorful team around you. So we talked about community, about mentors, about sponsors, people who work in your line of work, who don't, people who look like you, people who don't. I think all of this helps you kind of move into a different place in your career, kind of explore the pivots that you can take. So I think for me, it's been really valuable to do that, to network, to have people I trust having these conversations, people who have gone through similar experiences and people who haven't gone through similar experiences, because then together, you know, our diverse thinking, our diverse experiences can build something else, especially right now that we're in this remote world, like build that team of people, network. I'm so grateful that I have the opportunity to meet you and talk to you. And that comes from putting yourself out there, from building that network.
That is so, so fantastic. Everything you've shared today has been so helpful. And I'm so grateful that you gave me this chance to speak with you and to learn from you today. Thank you so much, Perla.
Absolutely. Thank you too. Thank you for having me.
Hey, if you would like to improve your style, I invite you to work with me one-on-one for 6 weeks. We go through a complete style overhaul. It's a transformation that's going to have you looking and feeling like the best version of yourself. When you change your style, you change your life and your confidence improves. I want to see you succeed. I want to see you become the best version of yourself. And we start with style. So if you're interested, reach out to me on Instagram at thecurrencyofstyle.